Hello everyone, welcome back to a Research VR podcast. Today we're joined by Christoph Izbetsky and Peter Lekov, the usual cast, and myself, Azad Balabanian. How's everyone doing today?
Well, fine. And you?
It's good.
Yeah, not bad at all. Wonderful. We're here to talk about research and virtual reality again, right guys?
Exactly. But I guess before we go over into the particular interesting news and research section, there's one thing I really would like to mention. And I will read out one sentence that the audience can think a little bit about. Imagine how much better a Lord of the Rings would have been if Tolkien was passionate about engagement in data-driven storytelling. Now, this was a very...
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I will tell you in a moment. This was a tweet that someone tweeted around me. I will link it. It was trolling me a little bit because at this point I kind of raged out and said, okay, people are using those buzzwords so much that I finally, you know, someone managed to say that an old writer that, you know, lived 70, 80 years ago should have used data-driven storytelling. He was obviously trolling and I fought for it. But this is a nice introduction for the next point that Goldman Sachs decided to make a report out of predictions how virtual reality will develop. And that states that till 2025, you will have 182 million, billion in revenue, where they think that 110 billion will be from hardware and 72 from the software. And to be honest, I'm a little bit, you know, I have mixed feelings. On the one hand, it's clear that virtual reality is a big thing. Otherwise, we wouldn't do a podcast about it. We are all in favor of it. But to predict such huge numbers over such a huge time span, it might really disappoint some people. Because maybe it will only develop half of it. Still amazing. What do the numbers really mean? It's more about the impact, right?
Right. It's not just how much money is being generated from it, but actually the impact of the technology in the different diverse fields that it's going into. I think that's going to be the real impact and not the real money that's being put right now. I've seen a couple of these predictive number reports coming out from a wide variety of sources. And like, honestly, I haven't really batted an eye towards it, and I haven't really paid much attention because it is such predictive numbers with literally almost no data to even base it on.
Well, they tried. I mean, when you look at the graphs, they kind of try to compare the smartphone shipments and tablet shipments to their predictions, where they say that the unit forecasts of virtual reality and augmented reality, they mix it, by the way. They assume that it will be far less lower than the adoption of the smartphone and tablets. And when you see their base case software assumptions, you kind of see that they put most of the money into video games and live events, video entertainment, where healthcare gets also a big share of 5 billion and engineering gets nearly 5 billion. Okay, I mean, those numbers, okay, they're random. They're kind of taken out of some kind of common sense, but I don't know how they can predict it, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point to make that, you know, this is still very much predictive and completely out of the blue. I mean, I kind of agree that the idea of VR adoption might be a little bit faster than phone adoption, but phone adoption kind of went exponential past the certain like critical point, right? So I think VR will have its critical point maybe 3 years down the line, or maybe even 4 years, where the killer apps are actually there, present, and very common thing that the news covers. That, I mean, that's how most people hear about things. This randomly seeing it on Instagram, you know, Snapchat, and the news will bring in the mass, just the mass public interest. So yeah, that's a good way to kind of start. There's a, you know, people are making are placing their bets on this technology and they want to see it grow. Obviously, Facebook is doing his own bet with subsidizing the Oculus Rift.
Yes.
And with the price that they gave it, and I think it's a totally fair price. And I'm expecting to see the HTC Vive to be slightly even bigger, or I mean, either at $600 or more, because it does come with its own controllers, which the Oculus does not.
Okay, but Azad, listen, Goldman Sachs has predicted in the report that the costs of to produce HTC Vive are less. I mean, they must know it. I don't think its price will be the same. It must be lower because they predicted it.
I don't know. I mean, I think that the tech, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. We're all just guessing.
I'm pretty sure that it's very hard to estimate what will be inside, especially because no one knows what HTC Vive will be shipping.
Right. Well, speaking of news, let's dive into our news section.
Yes.
So we've seen what the Pre looks like. We've seen what the new Chaperone system is based off of, this interesting camera that does all the edge detection work. So you seem to know a lot about it, Peter. Can you start talking about that?
Yes. So the most interesting, I guess, questions that people raised after they saw the camera on the HTC Vive is whether the video is being transmitted directly to the computer raw, and then the computer does some magic to it, sends it back. And in an interview, Chet Falishek did not admit, but kind of, you know, he slipped here and there some hints that it might be that the HTC Vive headset actually does some kind of pre-processing of the video that it gets and then sends it to the computer so the lag is lower. We'll also link a video where we see how it looks on the screen of the computer when the image from the HTC Vive arrives, some pass-through examples, and it kind of looks like they're doing some Kalman filter and other tricks that you would usually know from computer vision to detect edges, and then they send this video, I guess, in a less bitrate or whatever to the computer, and the computer decides what happens to it. Very interesting. We'll also link the interview because it's worth reading.
Definitely. We'll link everyone that hasn't really seen much of this new Chaperone system in the show notes. I have a couple of ideas of what I want to be doing with the system that we can kind of quickly go over. They did mention that the camera is going to be kind of slightly open for developers to play around with, and I think it's going to actually be a really interesting new interaction method to bring in objects from the real world into the virtual world with you. So they've actually mentioned that they're going to be selling, they're calling them pucks, and essentially, they're like the tracking mechanism for to put onto real objects to bring it with you. So it's going to look like, it's basically going to be looking like the stuff that's on top of the controllers themselves. And if you can also place that onto a trash can, like they've shown in December with that one demo they did in China, basically you can have that trash can that you're holding. It's like a bucket for you to place things into virtual objects. So that's, for me, that's the really interesting part, is like, I'm like, I want to actually bring my phone into the world with me, as in everyone carries a cell phone with them, you know, mobile phone. And so one interaction method could be that I take out my phone, I look at it, and, you know, obviously you're not going to be seeing what your phone, the content in your phone looks like, but you're holding a physical object. So, and you see that in the game, why don't you actually expand that and have screens popping out of that phone, or just different interaction things you can do with it? So instead of trying to simulate haptic feedback, why don't we actually use the real objects that we actually have, and it feels real and it's simple and it's cheap. So that could be a great way to start with, you know, instead of actually trying to play with your muscular, with playing with the electrical signals to your muscles, we can actually play with the real object and make that be a virtual object.
I think you have a point. It's better to have something in your hand compared to getting electroshocks.
Absolutely. So developers and people take note. You know, I think this is going to be an interesting way to approach virtual reality, where it's not just you and yourself, but also the objects around you. Because the Chaperone system, it will see the chair, the cup, the table, the people around you, and you can either go into full pass through mode, which is not a real color, you know, an RGB display. It's more of a blue shadowy outline of everything around you, but it gives you a good sense of what is in front of you. To mention, I'm actually going to be trying it out tomorrow at the VRLA convention.
Nice.
I'm very excited, and I'll report back and with my thoughts. Yeah, definitely. Moving on,
the next news is on the HoloLens. So there is a certain update coming from it. The Bruce Harris spoke in Tel Aviv about it on some kind of pub that was filmed, put it on YouTube. It's very interesting when he has been speaking there, because one of the questions he answered was the battery life. And he basically said that, you know, when you do heavy calculations, you have around 2.5 hours. And when I, you know, just do how he was describing it, Word and email, you get 5.5. Also, he was emphasizing that the marketing of HoloLens was not particularly very efficient, as he is, you know, very interested in the, I mean, he wanted the people to know that it's really a real computer you have on your head. So it's a real, how he said, Windows 10 laptop hardware that it's inside it, so you can really run every Windows app, theory at least, on it.
Yeah, that's a big point that he made, is that with the unification of all the devices with Windows 10, they're really designing the HoloLens to be a Windows 10 device, so that anything that works on your PC will work on the HoloLens. Huge. I mean, I can't wait for it to be trying out things like that. And he also actually, this was a really interesting way we got news, is because he was kind of candidly talking about this information in a bar in Tel Aviv, and it wasn't like someone was eavesdropping onto a conversation, but he was just standing in the bar and talking to, you know, 20-30 developers and whatnot, and talking about the HoloLens, so, and answering their questions. So someone asked him about the battery life, and he mentioned that with just normal use, whatever, you know, simple, not too heavy of a processing load to use, it's going to be about 5.5 hours. And I believe if it is, you know, very intense, it'll drop to like 2.5 or 2 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, it's to be expected with devices of this early stage. I don't think that's to their fault that they're doing that. I mean, it's a nice ergonomic looking device, and it doesn't have battery packs that are, you know, lugging down on you. So I'm excited to see what happens with that, and how I wonder if the charging mechanism, they can do it like wireless charging. I will be so happy if you can just place the glasses right next to you on a pad and it'll start charging. Like, that's I want that very much.
Well, the technology is there. Another thing that he was also speaking about was the field of view. So he described it as, you know, a 15 inch screen 2 feet away from your face, just kind of interesting, because it's not much, but he said that in the process of developing and production, they discovered that when you would have a brighter field of view, it would use more battery and cost way more, because the glass is somehow fragile. I don't really understood it, and no one else, I guess. But that's something, the limitation we have to live now within our first device, which is kind of fun.
It's not a technological limitation. It's more of a cost and battery issue, which I'm very happy to hear, because that just means it's a very scalable, you know, it's a problem that's going to be solved in the next generation, I know. And I think they're doing a retinal kind of projection. It's not a screen you're looking at.
No, it's a screen. It's actually a glass screen.
What is?
Okay. Unfortunately, they're not projecting.
Some kind of mirrors. Right. Right.
Yeah, it's rather so interesting. Some kind of glass that you see through, and then they project the stuff on it. That's how it works.
It's interesting to have like good new news coming from HoloLens in such a candid way, and it's I don't think they intended it to be that way. I'm sure some marketers were not happy with Bruce Harris about it, but
I have a theory. Maybe they are trying to mimic this Apple losing its prototype iPhone in the bar, and they apparently lost their, you know, boss in the bar who started to talk.
Yeah. Well, I think that was a genuine mistake, but other things has been like they want certain things have been leaked out that they didn't want. I think the same thing with the HTC Vive when the controllers and the things leaked.
Yes.
So moving on, last week we talked about the SMI foveated rendering.
Yes.
So we do have an update on that, and apparently they did talk about the price being low. So
I mean, they last week announced that if you would have, you know, a few units of the samples themselves, you would basically have to pay $12,000. It's comparable to the older version. And we are speaking right now not about the 60 hertz that they announced to research, but actually the 240 hertz, which is apparently enough for foveal rendering, so you track your eyes precise enough and fast enough to render it there.
So, right. I mean, the magic number for VR has been 90 hertz is for, I mean, that's photon to motion kind of latency with your screen, and that's the visual aspects of things. But the foveated rendering and just eye trackers, I mean, your eyes move in like ridiculous speeds. Your saccades are very quick.
Your eyes are the fastest movement your body can produce.
Exactly. So you need a system that can really handle something like that, like eye trackers that are very quick. And I think 240 hertz is quite a good number. Don't you think so, Peter?
In fact, Chris?
It's actually the minimum you need for foveated rendering.
Oh, wow.
That's what they stated in the first article. So I think it should be 250 hertz that they put in, but they require 240 for the foveated rendering to work, to be actually calculated in time.
Right. And it's interesting to note that from the reaction videos and the reaction things I've read is to the user, there's no difference whenever you use foveated rendering and where you don't, which is a great point to make.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, from a processing perspective, I think how much does foveated rendering help? Do we have a number in terms of...
No, that's another
question. We don't have a number.
No one knows. That's the thing, whether it actually takes more calculation and power to do it or not. But let's be honest, if you have, let's say... 12K or 14K screen in the, you know, fifth generation of Oculus, there I might suggest that even if foveated rendering is like, you know, super complex with a computer and you need some crazy algorithms, it will still be significantly less costly in terms of calculation power than, you know, to render actually 14, 15K.
Right. But
can we put the calculation power required for foveated rendering on the CPU, not on the GPU, and just tell GPU what it should render?
Technically, yes. But, I mean, I think it's a pipeline.
So,
yes, first of all, the device that detects your eye movement, and I'm pretty sure that SMI put in the software for analyzing the, you know, the information of the movement directly into the camera. So it gives already the position to the computer, and then it should basically adjust what it's rendered. It's done by the CPU. Maybe you will see in future some special GPUs that have some special connection to it. You know, remember power cards from the 90s?
And we get this this idea of dedicated hardware for specific purpose and need is exactly what was shown off at CES this year, with NVIDIA and Qualcomm all, you know, producing chipsets for drones, automated driving,
yes,
and as well for VR. So I think we will have the technology will match the ideas, and you know, it's kind of will grow together in a parallel line. So if foveated rendering processing is what we need, I think that's what we'll be getting. Very cool. But the price, we mentioned last podcast that it's like $10,000 for the current SMI eye tracker to be implemented into an Oculus DK2. Now they're talking about if they produce 1 million units of the SMI eye trackers, then there'll be, what was it, $10?
Yeah, $10 or less. So they said a couple of bucks, which makes sense because the hardware itself is not particularly costly. It's just a video camera and a chip they press their software on. It's rather the research is more costly itself.
Right. Very cool. I'm excited to see what happens more with eye trackers. SMI isn't the only one. Obviously, there's Fove with their headset, and even iFluence, which is like a minor company, and they have their own proprietary eye tracking technology. So let's see what happens of it. We're definitely keeping our eyes peeled to this kind of technology.
Well, definitely. It seems that it at least has to be either in the next or next version of all the VR headsets that are coming right now. So it's definitely, you cannot not do it, right? So it's just something you have to adopt at some point. It's kind of everyone's aware of it.
Right. Do you guys want to talk about the Facebook engineering wizardry that kind of came out yesterday?
Yes.
Okay.
I just scrolled today through Twitter and I saw that and I could not believe my eyes, so I actually checked it. So what Facebook has been working on is compressing or adjusting the stream of the 360-degree video because, you know, they have to pay the traffic. And when you watch a 360-degree video on Facebook, you first of all want to have a nice, clean, you know, experience. You don't want any lags or anything. So it has to buffer and stream all the time. And also this buffering is not very pleasant. So they are playing around with it. And the first thing they did is, if you're a game developer, you kind of should know how the skybox and Unity works. You basically have surfaces. And that's what they did. They took the 360-degree video. that is, you know, rather as fair, and they produced it on those cubes and without.
So let's just briefly mention it for people that don't know. It's called, so the idea is called cube mapping, and it's being done currently with any kind of like video streaming for 360 videos. Essentially, you take the video and you split it into what it looks like. You know, when you're a child, you're like making cubes. You have like all the surfaces, and you have them as squares, and then whenever you put them all together, it becomes a cube. So essentially, you take the video and you split it into those squares so that you can make a cube map around the user. So the front is a flat surface like this, and then all around you. So it's an interesting compression method, and it gave 25% better efficiency for video streaming.
Exactly. The video that we link it also is being explained how they can save it.
Exactly. And what Facebook actually just did is instead of doing a cube map for the video compression, they're doing this kind of this triangular prism. So in front of you, instead of seeing like a square of the image, it's actually a triangle, and the rest of the tip of the prism, the tip of the pyramid kind of goes
it's
behind
a pyramid,
you. So it's, I think they're claiming up to like 75% better efficiency.
Exactly.
That way.
So the idea is that they split this pyramid also in virtual squares where they have different resolutions. That means that most of the times, I assume you look, in the front, and there the resolution is really good, but the resolution behind you is very poorly streamed. And the moment you look there, you still see something. It doesn't have to buffer, but then it just adopts the resolution dynamically. So the idea is that you, instead of having one video stream like you used to have on this round video file you can also download from the internet, like 360-degree video, you have like 20 parallel video streams that have different quality that are being sticked together into this pyramid-like shape.
Hmm. I think in the end, when we get better at doing 360 video and our cinematography and whatnot, it'll be more like it'll be less of you swiveling around in a chair and more looking at one specific, direction of the video. And that'll be, maybe you'll have a different, slightly of a range that moves from left to right of your head, maybe within 70 degrees or so, because that's like, it's not straining for your neck, but it won't be like you swiveling around 360. Oh, now I have to look behind me. Now I have to look in front of me. It's like, it'll be variable, but like, so I think this type of compression would work really well when you're looking at one specific part of the video, but I think it works well for like 360 as well. So,
well, it's adaptive. I mean, the moment you look somewhere, it just basically adapts the resolution there. But I mean, how often do you really rotate your head all the time 360?
Exactly. So I think having that in mind, we just don't have enough data of like people using, or watching these videos, or how we're supposed to be doing slowly by slowly. I'm guessing they have enough data that they're like, oh, we should probably concentrate it this way.
Exactly.
So,
but Facebook is not the only company that has very interesting VR news. Azad, our Apple expert, has to comment on the recent Apple VR rumors.
Right. Actually, so they just hired someone big today, and his name is Doug Bowman, who's a pretty big researcher for VR. He had actually worked on, what did he work on? He's done 3D. He has a book out called 3D Interfaces.
Mm-hmm. He was also the former director of the human interaction department in Virginia Tech.
Yes, he was from VTech. I believe he's worked for Holo, for Microsoft, and I believe also Oculus as well. And Microsoft just hired him. So it's interesting to see what they've been working on. I still have no clear idea, but Apple is definitely in the game, and they're working in stealth mode about this. Exactly. I don't think they'll be announcing anything this upcoming year. They usually like to wait and see how the technology plays out, wait for Android to do its thing, and then come in with a revolutionary new idea and get the mass market.
If you look at the patterns they have done, it looks a little bit like a Gear VR thingy, or you put your phone inside.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows?
I think that... Well, absolutely. I think that's going to be a great way for them to go into it. And I mean, there's this one app on the Apple TV that now supports 360 video, and you can watch a 360 video on your Apple TV, and you look left and right by like swiping your finger on the new Apple TV remote. So the hardware is there in terms of like the people in the room watching you be in VR, I think, on a TV. The only thing that's missing is the actual HMD. So they're probably working on something like that that connects to your phone, you know, a Gear VR competitor, which everyone would, not everyone would buy, but like would have a lot bigger market reach than just people that have Samsung S6 phones and Edge phones. So, which is the main concern of the Gear VR is people asking, oh, does this work for my iPhone?
Mm-hmm. So, do you think, Chris, that when Apple launches something about VR, it will change the market? It will be the new iPad?
Yes. Yes.
I don't think so.
Why? No.
Yeah,
I mean, what could you imagine? You know, they always come up with this, you know, this eye pencil thing and stuff. I don't know. How would they announce it?
I don't know, you guys, but when they do release something, it usually really catches everyone's attention, which is the main point. I don't think it will be revolutionary per se. I think people would have done the things that they will be doing. It'll just be simple and easy, and all the major news headlines will talk about it. It'll put VR in people's attention, which is that's what Apple is very good at, and that's what they'll be doing, and which is exactly why I don't think they'll be announcing anything this in 2016.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that it's going to be amazing. I'm just saying that it's at least going to make things more mainstream. Same with the Apple Watch. I mean, it's not a revolutionary device at all, but 50% of mobile, smartwatch wearers are actually, it's an iWatch. So Apple Watch. So
yes, I have mixed feelings about this device. I mean, on the one hand, I understand that it's very helpful. I think it's overpriced, but well, people like it. So.
True. So we're putting a cap onto our, you know, discussions in terms of the news, because there's a lot that's happened in the past and we're trying to cover them. So let's talk about Crytek and what they're doing for research institutions.
Well, apparently, because the CryEngine and Crytek companies that owns the CryEngine, you might know it from Crysis 3, is going to give full source code access for, you know, universities and researchers who are working with it or want to work with it, which is very neat. I have suspicions that they are just feelings that no one using them, even though their engine is quite powerful in terms of graphics. But I think they have a lot of pressure by Unreal Engine and Unity, so they are moving. They're making this move. I think they are also opening their own cooperated VR lab in Istanbul, where they're basically financing the research there.
The University of Istanbul is like the main research institution that they're working with.
Very interesting.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how they picked that.
Oh, they're actually from Germany. That's a funny part. So I don't know.
Are they?
Picked Turkey. Yeah. Crytek used to be a German company. Well.
Huh.
Well, to you fellow researchers, if you're, you know, in need of a engine and you don't want to spend money, contact Crytek. We will link the link.
Yeah. I'm curious to see, you know, if I can hook up my research lab with them as well. I mean, this was just news that just came out very recently. So I don't know if the program has actually started yet. But, yeah, they're really trying to enable researchers to do this kind of work.
Yeah.
Another
quite interesting news for, I assume, more researchers, but I guess long-term also the developers, is that Google Tango, the project that you maybe know from this tablet, walk around, it's kind of Kinect-like, scanning the room and knowing where it is. Intel is working with Google to make hand tracking in mobile headsets like smartphones possible, which is very interesting because we see a lot of this hand tracking coming up, not only from our lovely friends from Leap Motion, who created a very interesting device that changed a lot of how people, you know, think you could interact with things, but also that you could actually do it with a smartphone. I think it's quite neat.
So they're using this thing called Ion VR, which is apparently a new VR device that's kind of works like Gear VR and Google Cardboard, you know, mobile VR. And their unique selling point is that they're promising to eliminate the motion sickness by using this mysterious optical technology called motion sync. So there's some, you know, clever probably software solutions happening to eliminate any kind of latency issues, or I mean, they haven't even talked about it at all. But are they using Intel's RealSense? Is that what's happening?
No, it's actually, I'm not sure if it's real. Yeah, it's RealSense, but it was also about the Google Tango thing.
Yeah, exactly. Google Tango and Intel's RealSense are kind of trying to solve the same issue, which is stereoscopic cameras that see depth. And you can essentially do augmented reality things with that. So having both of those.
Maybe I just mixed up something.
There are two topics here. One is that Google Tango was shown on CES together with virtual reality to track hands. Mm-hmm. And here we have another example of Intel working with Ion VR to create
yes.
a mobile head-mounted display. When you put any... Theoretically, Ion VR produces head-mounted displays for any smartphone.
Oh, I see.
You can get a dive-like head-mounted display, but with the branding.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. There is actually a smartphone from Intel that uses Google Tango.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think the headset we've just been speaking about is indeed using the RealSense from Intel that is comparable, yes.
I see. For some reason, I thought Google's Project Tango and Intel's RealSense are just main competitors.
They are.
They wouldn't be. They are. Okay.
They are. However, I'm not sure if... I mean, I never saw RealSense in a smartphone. Apparently, it's possible. It's very interesting.
And now it is. Yeah, they're working with Lenovo for that, which leads us to...
Okay, I see. The smartphone that Intel has released, this Intel RealSense smartphone developer kit, is actually supporting both Google Project Tango and RealSense.
I see.
Camera, and so both RealSense mm-hmm. camera ecosystem and Google Tango developer ecosystem, which is pretty neat for developers because they don't have to choose, but can basically, you know, choose
right.
both, which is nice.
So we have major manufacturers working on
yes.
mobile VR, you know, apart from Oculus and Samsung, Google's in it, Intel's in it, great stuff happening around. And also Lenovo. Lenovo kind of pulled an interesting move today where they released this Lenovo K4 unit in India, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and basically 10,000 units of them were sold in 0.9 seconds. How that was possible and how I hadn't heard about it until the news came out that just happened. I don't know. Maybe it was all bots buying it, but essentially there was probably some kind of a way of doing like a soft launch for a new device. Do you guys want to talk about that, about what they're doing and what this Ant VR is?
Well, it's basically another Google Cardboard that they're
right.
you know, basically putting together with the smartphones they have, and it's apparently nice working. I think the reason we didn't hear a lot about it is they choose an interesting market to launch it, an Indian market, which is usually not getting the newest VR developer gadgets first, but
right.
apparently it was a success, and I think this was more about selling the smartphones than about the smartphone holder, but nice,
right.
nice PR gig.
I mean, there's a lot of you know, tech innovation and startups coming out of India,
definitely.
So I wonder if this is a way for the Indian VR startup community to really, you know, to come about and to start making moves in this industry.
Well, there are also a small German startup that has actually managed to go on Kickstarter that has a very very neat project. It's called VR Lens Lab, and what that
yes.
doing is providing
yes.
custom lenses for your Gear VR so it doesn't scratch. And apparently you can also get their holder for the lens and get some special lens that is adjusted to your eyes. So when you're wearing goggles, you can have the same glasses, right?
So exactly. So they're doing prescription lenses for virtual reality, which
yes.
is something I might have mentioned even before, but that's something that we've been predicting.
Uh-huh.
Well, I can't take the credit for that. That prediction comes from Jesse Schell from Schell Games, who created I Expect You to Die. And he has a really interesting talk where he has 40 predictions of VR by 2020. And he talks about, you know, having prescription lenses in for virtual reality HMDs. So you guys should definitely watch that video. We'll link it in the show notes as well. But basically, yeah, we're going to be, for people that wear glasses, I mean, even though HMDs support glasses, if you yourself buy one, you probably will want to swap in your own lenses that are adjusted to your own eyes. And so you don't have to wear glasses inside.
Well, Chris just recently bought himself a Gear VR, as many of people I actually know, which is very interesting. Do you think, Chris, you will order yourself one of those?
I actually baked them already for the highest ticket that they offered. So they will send me a special set of the lenses when they actually succeed.
Nicely done. Do you know these people or did you just contact them?
No, first of all, it was just $29. Right. For the highest bidding ticket there. So I didn't hesitate. And second of all, I already had an email history with the CEO of that company because he's also doing VR cover. Those are special covers for your phone.
Oh, is that him?
Around your face. Yes.
Yeah.
Similar. Don't know if the whole team is the same, but this guy is the same.
Fantastic. He's really thinking ahead, actually. And the VR cover is a great project because we actually have the VR cover in the Oculus DK 2 that we use in the lab.
Oh, nice.
I mean, it's so disgusting without it. Like, the foam just gets so sweaty and it's gross and it doesn't feel good. And if you yourself, if you're demoing these things to a lot of people, it's really gross. You really need a VR cover. So.
Yes, definitely.
I actually had that in mind when I bought a VR cover from them. But the second point is that the new Gear VR has actually a little more open space on the corner of it. So there is much more light coming in.
Really?
Yes, it also feels a little bit more cheap than the previous one, unfortunately.
Than the Note 4 Innovator?
The one in between. So I've been basically three, and the second one was also fitting the S6 and S6 Edge, and it felt a little bit more luxury than the new one. But, I have to.
I wouldn't call it luxury. I know. I would just call it bigger. This one offers you much more space. Yes. And that's what might create another feeling.
I'm having trouble keeping up with how many Gear VR. Is it three?
Yes.
Is it three
it's
right
three,
now?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Three and a half, because there was a first one, then there was one for Note 4, and then there was similar as for Note 4, but for S6 and S6 Edge, and now there is this one.
And then this one? Whoa, okay, I didn't... So this is a fourth edition.
Yeah, well, they don't call it that.
Three and a half.
Yeah, there was something in
this. I know they do have fans in the Gear VR that help with the lens fogging.
But you never hear them. Good. It's very suspicious. I mean, they always talk about it, but I never actually observed them working.
Right. No, that's brilliant.
That's what makes them perfect, you know? You don't even notice them existing.
That's good design right there.
Exactly.
And the best design is no design at all. Then you don't notice it, so.
Okay.
So,
let's switch to research.
So that was a little news in our interpretation a discussion about it. And now we want to transition into the research side. Today's topic, we really want to talk about locomotion and the research done in how, I mean, that's a really big problem in today's, in this VR industry, is how the hell do you actually get around? As an overview, we can talk about, you know, positional tracking and room scale tracking. It's good. It's, you can walk around in your room. It's a very small, you know, let's say 5 foot by 5 foot area. For most people, you know, it's not, you don't really have a huge area to be walking around in, like research kind of facilities. But so you have that. So how the hell do you actually get around instead of that 5 foot? One of the ways is to do it is through teleportation. That works, but it has its own problems with when you teleport, you're disoriented when you get there. Another way to do it is like actually scaling yourself up to be bigger. I've seen this actually before where you're, you know, normal size, and then if you want to walk around, you become huge, and then you walk through the map, and then you like downscale yourself, which is another way. Another really just research-based way is called redirected walking. And we've been really interested in looking in the results of this, where it basically means where the way to visualize it is actually very simple. If you close your eyes and you walk straight forward, And actually, in not too long of a time, you'll end up starting to walk in circles. Like, your body is very bad at keeping walking straight oriented. That's the same problem where people have when they're walking through jungles. They actually, if you have no compass, if you have no direction, you actually end up walking in circles and end up in the same kind of vicinity and area that you were in.
Yes.
So the same principle can be applied in VR, where you can actually, if you slightly tilt the visual so that the person starts walking left, they don't even realize it. They think they're walking straight forward. So you can have a certain curve and an angle to that stepping motion so that they think they're walking straight forward, but you're actually curving them so they don't hit the wall and they, you know, head in the opposite direction. Or, I mean, at a redirected angle. What do you guys think about this kind of research?
There is a certain disadvantage of this approach, and that is that if you want to actually bend someone's path,
yes,
you have to do it very unnoticeably.
Right.
And to do it unnoticeably, you actually need a quite sizable distance to walk on which you can bend, which makes it very difficult to use, for example, for HTC Vive, where you really have 4 meters by 4 meters.
Yes.
This is true, yes.
On this distance, you really can't do it. There is a chance you could do it while person is rotating his head, which is said in the paper that we'll quote later here about exactly that approach. But personally, I think that would fail with the modern virtual reality, because you would just feel that you're rotating more than 360 degrees if you start to rotate.
See, I know where you're coming from, but I think if you have a rotation that's big enough, so it's not just, you know, you're not moving your head maybe 10 degrees, but it's actually, let's say, 70 degrees so that you're looking over your shoulder. If you actually look over your shoulder, maybe that you can trick it so that you're actually looking at 180 degrees. So that's maybe a 20, you know, that's... Yeah, so that maybe, sorry, not 70 degrees, or let's say something over 90 degrees. Let's say 110 or 120 degrees, or looking over your shoulders from looking straight ahead to looking left. You maybe if that entire blur that you have whenever you're looking, you can rotate this world just by a little bit. So you can, when you're walking backwards, where you think it's 100 and you know you're walking straight back, it's actually at an angle. So I mean, that was an interesting suggestion that was made in the paper, and I think with good enough testing, we can do things with that, perhaps. What do you guys think? It's something you have to really try out, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been talking like 4 years ago with the Professor Klaus Grammann from Germany, from Berlin, that was actually using redirecting walking for his navigation experiment.
Exactly. He's a quite famous person, actually, in navigation studies.
Really?
Yeah, we will also link to his page.
But I'm still not convinced. I didn't have a chance to test, because back then his new lab was still building. So,
well, I think the magic number that I've seen is 50 foot by 50 foot is the area you need to have unlimited space. So if you have a 50 foot room, what is it in meters?
I will tell you in a moment.
50 foot to meter. So
in meters, dear Google says 15 meters.
No, it's a lot.
15. No. 50 foot.
Yes. 50 foot is 15 meters.
15. Right.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. It's not small at all. It's not one room. No. It's like it's quite a large size area, but
it's really hard to get it.
But I mean, think of the potential for it though. I mean, maybe not for room scale, just for any user in their own house, but like,
you know what? I'd say that if I have the money to get a 15 by 15 meter room, it would be still cheaper for me to just buy Cyber or Omni.
Or the Omni.
And just have the omnidirectional treadmill.
Just probably.
And then I am totally unlimited.
Yeah, true.
Probably. But the ergonomics and the feel of locomotion is definitely different. And it's completely...
That depends what you need it for.
Yeah, that's very true. It's for different purposes. And
In fact, there is also a kind of new omnidirectional treadmill that they have been showing at CES. I'm not sure if I like it. It's called Infin Desk. So it's the last link in the list, guys, if you can click on it. If you scroll down, it's very strange. Compared to the other omnidirectional treadmills that we have been seeing, where you slide in every direction,
this omnidirectional thread mill is actually rolling in one direction, and in the other you slide. It means...
So there's actually even a video of Lucky Palmer. Or Palmer Lucky on this. Oh, yeah. No, he tried it out at the CES. Yeah, he was... They were at CES, and there's a video of him trying it out.
Oh.
It's... So from what I've seen from the videos, it's basically... Think of a normal treadmill that you walk on. You know, it's one directional. But think of the tracks that... the 1-inch long track, right? You know, those things that go underneath treadmill and come back up. Those tracks actually have the ability to move in the complete opposite direction as well, or to the perpendicular direction. It's when you see someone on it, actually, it looks like how the hell are they walking in the 90 degree direction of the actual treadmill? And it's because there's actually the tracks itself move there. So the system is not that intuitive because you have to wear this belt basically that's connected to the thing, and that belt I'm guessing figures out your lean and what direction you're walking, and that's what it moves the treadmill in the direction that you want to walk. So you have full 360 degrees of walking motion, and I think to you it feels all the same, even though the track itself is different for each direction or each axis. But basically that belt is how it feels. It knows which direction you're walking in. So the one problem that I saw, someone testing it out, is that whenever you just stand there and you actually just move your hip in a certain direction, then the treadmill itself will start moving in that direction as well, because it thinks you're moving in you see what I mean? It thinks you're walking. So it's, I mean, it's interesting, it's smart in a way, but it has its limitations, and I think I'll be able to try it out at this VRLA convention.
There's going to be tell about it.
Yeah, the Omni.
Let's put hold with the comments about it until you try it.
Definitely,
because to me it looks like it doesn't really have an advantage.
Yes. However, I just found the video, I also link it. It's Palmer Lucky trying it. He looks happy.
Yeah, he does. I'm sure he loves just trying on any of these technologies that have spawned off from his creation. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure he feels like the god of VR.
He kind of, him and. God, names are escaping me today, but I think he has like 40 something HMDs.
John Carmack.
Said.
40?
Carmack, yes, thank you. Yeah, he's actually, I think it was at Oculus Connect or maybe E3. Whoa. He was saying that he has about 40. I mean, they're all prototypes and whatnot. But I mean, he's been creating them and really been in the HMD game for about like since the 2000s. So
interesting. Maybe you will open a museum or something.
I think that's probably the plan later on.
Okay, coming to our next news.
So locomotion. Oh, we're talking about locomotion. There's one demo I tried out last week that I want to talk about, locomotion. And it's from this very small company that is now funded by Boost VC, which is this accelerator in San Mateo, and they're currently just like funding just virtual reality companies. And this reality, so they're called Realities. Their link is realities.io. Their whole point is basically to use drones and to scan German castles and just interesting points of interest. You scan it, you do a photogrammetry recreation of it, and then you actually can go to that castle and walk around in it as a real tourist, right? So it's almost like VR tourism. Very interesting things. The one thing that really actually impressed me was how you move around in that space. So I tried it out on an HTC Vive, so which gives you, you know, the 5-foot walking around area. I think the Vive actually supports larger than that, but that's what they had. You can walk around in that area, but the way you can actually go further in the castle or further to walk is they're using this teleportation method, but it's not just teleportation. So you click, you look at where you want to go, and you click the button to go there, but so the problem with teleportation is that you're disoriented when you do teleport. You know, you're like, you land there, you look around, you're like, I don't know which direction I came from, and I don't know where I'm looking at. What they do is actually, they kind of very quickly move you there. So it almost feels like, you know, fast travel, but it's not slow or fast enough that it makes you motion sick. So they found this really interesting sweet spot of motion that is also variable because of the distance. So like if you want to teleport only in a short distance, that speed is going to be different than if you're going to teleport at far distance. Mm. So it's a variable speed, but that basically they've figured out this really cool sweet spot that you actually know where you're going, you see what's happening, it's fast enough, but you're also teleporting. So I was having fun running down this corridor, basically, or just teleporting. So it was like, teleport, 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 like click, 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 and I was like fast traveling through there. And it felt really fast. Like, I mean, it felt cool. It's almost like you're gliding in a sense. So it's a very fast, movement around, and I think we could. It's a good novel way of approaching this mm-hmm. locomotion idea. I wish you guys.
Side note.
Yeah.
I actually think that we've worked with those guys, or at least their product, 2009.
So
because they are from Tübingen, and we've worked with the photogrammetrically pictured Tübingen.
So
by Max Planck Institute.
Yeah,
so maybe they are actually a spin-off of exactly.
Yes, project. We have been showing on the last CeBIT Fuel Space demo where we had virtual tubing that was scanned with, I think at that time it was lasers or laser scanning technology, but now they're
it was just very good. It was just very good photo camera, very good cameras, mm-hmm. and then they did all the calculations to change the pictures.
Right. Do you guys do you know Daniel Sproul, who is their CXO for the company?
No, but we also never spoke to the guys who created this demo. I think that
I see.
It was just some cooperation between the Tübingen guys and this, but it's interesting that they're from Tübingen. By the way, do you think the drones will have some kind of influence on virtual reality? I linked a video and
yes.
you'll also see yes. it later in the show links that show how people have created so-called bit drones, where those things form a screen in front of you. Those are like small drones.
Oh,
wow. Are having cubes around them, and you can touch those cubes, and those cubes are virtual pixels. And then you can basically
have
a drone with a screen on it. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, you this can is touch going into mixed reality and augmented reality. we'll link it in the videos. This is the first time I'm seeing this fascinating stuff from the Human Media Lab from Queen's University. Very interesting. I don't know much about it, so I can't, speculate. But to answer your question on drones, I saw one thing this week that really excited me, and it's the people behind Avigant Glyph, which is basically the pair of headphones. They look like Beats,
yes.
but when you move the top part of the headphone, the band down to your nose, so it's in front of your eyes, there's actually a retinal projection screen in there. Do you guys know what I'm talking
yes,
about?
Yes, it's a very interesting Kickstarter. We have been really thinking
yes.
hard to put money in it.
So I actually tried it out the other day. There's a really cool store in Palo Alto called Beta, with a B8TA. Basically, it's like the way I describe it is it's Kickstarted the store. So every almost all the cool Kickstarter devices you've seen to, but never played with, they have it there.
Nice.
And some of the prototypes they have it there, you can play around with, and you can actually buy some of the things. So I checked out the Avigant Glyph there. I was just watching a 3D video from my phone that you can connect through your the lightning connection in your phone, and it just plays it there. And it has IPD adjustments. It's actually a very clear screen, even though it's 720p. It actually feels better than that.
Well, the trick is that they don't have real pixels, but the light is
right.
directly projected into your retina. That means you don't really see the pixel borders, right?
Right. It's neat. Cool. It's not a VR HMD by any means, but it does have an accelerometer in there so that you can do 360 video viewing. What really excited me about it is I saw this video, we'll link it in the show notes again, where basically they're using a DJI Phantom drone that But the way you actually, you know, people do like first person view cameras and HMDs for drones, you can actually use an Avigant glyph for it, and it has head tracking. So, you're flying the drone with your, you know, with the controller in your hands, but you're actually controlling the camera with your head. So you're looking at the directions that you want to be doing. This is a, like a game changer for any kind of cinematography.
Yes. And whatnot.
Like now you don't need a second person to control the camera while you control the drone. You control the camera while you're flying the drone. So I can't wait to get my hands, you know, on a pair of on these headphones or this HMD, let's call it, and a drone and see how they work well together. Norman from Tested has a video on that, and that's what really excited me, and we'll link that.
Nice.
What do you guys think? I mean, I think drones, I mean, what I want is to feel like I'm flying, right? Everyone wants that.
Yeah. So
drones are the easiest way that you can get there to do that in real life. I mean, well, yes, you can do...
Drones are a very fascinating topic, per se. Like, Chris just bought himself a drone a few days ago. I've been flying around, so it's super not trivial. And I also have a friend of mine who is having a drone startup in Berlin where they try to, you know, create drones to scan windmills for damage and also, you know, distribute some kind of stuff that you put on fields. So agriculture drone usage, I think it's a very hot topic, especially when you think about how much money is going right now to drone delivery and other things. And obviously scanning environments with drone is way easier than, you know, going with your camera in your hand just going around. And also having it connected to a glyph, I think it's really amazing. You could fly this thing and look around. I think it gives you really a nice feel that you are flying. I think it must be mind-blowing. I saw something similar when I was on the Congress, CCC Congress, but it was not with head tracking. So it was just a camera, a GoPro on the drone. But when you have head tracking, oh, that's amazing.
Definitely. I can't wait to just, you know, have the ability to be on top of my house.
Yeah.
Or actually, I think even what would be interesting is the ability to see yourself in third person.
Oh my gosh, like this might be so
every time. It is a mindfuck. Every time I've done that before, it's just like blows your mind. It's an out-of-body experience, and it's such a surreal experience. So having maybe a drone that kind of is following you right behind you and while you're wearing an HMD, like think about that. I mean, it's...
Well, there was an art project where someone actually has put a camera above him.
Yeah.
So he was seeing himself from a third perspective, like in a game, and he was looking around through the Oculus. It was very strange. I mean,
I think it was a maze you have to walk through, right? While seeing the video from a top-down perspective.
I don't know.
I'd love to try that.
Yes, but it must be some psychedelic experience. I don't know. It must be super trippy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Any more input on the locomotion that we can kind of talk about from what we've seen? Any cool ideas that have been popping out to you that is worth exploring?
This tactical haptics thing. Mm.
It's not really about locomotion,
but at least interaction, right?
Right. It's exactly.
It's a very special way to give you feedback.
Can you tell a little bit more about it, Chris?
Sure.
It's a other name for it is a shear feedback, which means that there are certain objects on the controller that will stretch your skin. So they will just push your skin, not inside your finger, but on like a flat surface. So like push
in your palm.
Forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
which, for example, when you have them in the grip of your controller and you move one down and one up, and in the game, you shoot a pistol that will give you a recoil feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the pistol shoots in your hand, it also moves in a similar direction. So the front of the grip goes up and back of the grip goes down, because that's how the recoil works.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
I actually tried the haptical feedback or haptical tactics at SVVR.
Oh.
I've tried it a couple of times. Yeah, I didn't know you guys knew about this tech, actually. I've met the co-founder, and I met the people. Even NBC News interviewed me. It's one of these meetups that like they wanted me to talk about this. I was actually very impressed, you guys, by this. Let's explain it for the people. It's actually very hard to really visualize what it feels like. But take an HTC Vive controller. Very simple, right? You have a Vive controller. You have the middle part that you're holding. So whatever is in your palm of your hands, that little, let's call it a shaft, no pun intended, around it, there are these three vertical plastic pieces, basically, around the shaft that you're holding.
Sliders.
Yes, those things slide up and down the God, can I call it something other than shaft?
I think it's fine.
Let's just call it a grip. Yes, let's call it a controller, around the controller. So every time you do something, let's say you have a whip, you whip something forward, those three sliders move independently up and down, and it actually feels how it would feel when you have a whip in your hand, like that motion of the reaction. So you can do things like guns, it has you feel the recoil of those things, you know, moving down perhaps, or I don't even know how individually they move, like you don't really think of it, but it feels like you have an actual reactive interaction technique.
For the recoil, as I told you, it's actually the one that is in front goes up and the one that is in back goes down.
Right, that makes sense. So I tried a whip one where actually you whip things and then you select these boxes, and whenever you hold them, you actually feel the weight of that box. When you swip it back, that box kind of like it springs backwards and you feel how that comes back. And then there was a gun demo, which felt cool. And then there was a bow, like archery. So you pull that back. Whenever you pull back the bow with the arrow on it, it just feels like something's pulling against. What really actually impressed me was, do you guys know what a slinky is?
No.
So a slinky, I'm sure you know what it is, but probably called something else in Germany. It's it looks like an aluminum, like rings, like circular rings, that it's one long thing that's been sprung into a thing. And you put it down, it falls down the stairs, you know, just like one by one.
Yes.
You know what
yes.
I mean? Okay, so take that idea. And imagine holding it. And so when you pull the string, you feel the tension of a spring, right?
Yes.
So you can actually do that in with these tactical haptics. So when you have the controllers, you press the button and you pull them apart. Those things actually, the sliders, somehow they move that you feel the tension of something. And when you twist it left and right, like your hands are moving in opposite directions, you feel that thing twisting. It's fascinating, actually, how they've done that. And I can't wait for them to get picked up by one of these big VR manufacturers and integrated into their own controllers.
Yeah, they actually failed the Kickstarter in 2013.
Right.
Well, they were clearly at least 1 year too early with that.
I think so. Like, I don't think they should be doing their own thing because, like, games need to support it. But I think if they get picked up, this technology gets acquired by one of the companies, like, that will be a great, great addition to haptical, you know, tactical feedback. Mm-hmm. Not maybe haptics, but tactical. Just cool feedback. And so
interestingly, those were not just for the controllers, but they have also already prototypes where you can put them on your forearm, and it will stretch your skin on the forearm.
I didn't know that.
The feeling of stretching. So if you're like, I'm actually not even sure what you can do with that. I don't know, like you're pulling something very hard, and you also feel a feeling of your muscles.
Yeah.
On your forearm.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating stuff. I mean, there's a lot happening with these small companies just experimenting things, and we're here to talk about these new research methods and just new experimental methods of locomotion, haptic feedback, and anything VR related.
Yes, maybe the last thing we can discuss is this future of storytelling.
Sure. Do you want to go into that?
Who put it there? Chris?
Yes, so there is actually a company that focuses on building the community of storytellers for different media, especially for the new media. And one of them is also virtual reality. So the idea here is to create a group, like crowdsource how to tell the story considering the new media. And wow,
they have some big names behind the project. They have advisors, yeah. Al Gore.
No.
It's actually an advisor, but which is interesting. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, I was just going to say that they had a annual meeting in the New York last year in autumn. So I believe that this year in autumn, they will meet again. So it's just worth mentioning to keep tabs on them.
Right. The URL is called futureofstorytelling.org, and they're calling it, it's Khan Academy meeting Cirque du Soleil. Apparently that's what the summit was summarized as, but seems interesting. It's not just pure VR, I think, but VR I'm sure has a huge factor now. Yep. Now that they're realizing.
Yeah.
So as I said, it's about the new media, so not right. VR. But
now you look at the trailers, you see the augmented reality, VR, tablets, smartphones, everything placed together, which is kind of very highly interesting.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, we're excited about these developments, and we'll definitely keep our listeners up to, you know, whenever we learn something, we like to talk about it and report it to you guys. So I hope everyone has been enjoying our podcast. We have an interview podcast coming up soon that we'll be uploading, and we're still essentially playing with the different structures of the podcast. So this one, I feel, was a lot more structured and with fast news, and then we talk about the research. So if you like it, you know, let us know. If you don't like it, definitely let us know. We're always reiterating on our formatting. So
definitely, especially if you're thinking we are too short podcasting or too long, just give us some feedback. If you want us to go more deep into certain topics, or let's say more deep into the news, or provide more scientific papers, just drop us a line. We are very curious. We are doing it for you.
Yeah. This is just something fun that we wanted to do, and it's something we already do, and we wanted to publish it and put it out for people to listen. So you can find us on Twitter. I'm at AzadUX. Peter is
Raziello, but you can just enter Peter Lekov, Peter without the second E.
And Chris, yours is
Rodion R.
These will all be in the show notes, all the links and things that we just mentioned. We're pretty good at keeping up the chapters and things. So thank you for joining us for another Research VR podcast, and we'll see you guys in a week or two.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.